Trofinco's Valor Program for veteran entrepreneurs is especially tailored to support veterans in transitioning to business ownership with dedicated financial solutions and resources. For traveling entrepreneurs, the program offers flexibility and support in funding, critical for those exploring new markets. Business owners will find the personalized approach and understanding of veteran needs invaluable for expanding operations or starting new ventures. Empower your entrepreneurial journey with the Valor Program and turn your business vision into reality. New U-Life Somaderm Gel. Travelers and business owners can benefit from enhanced energy levels and improved sleep quality. Crucial for adjusting to new time zones and maintaining peak performance during business operations. Entrepreneurs will appreciate the potential anti-aging effects, supporting a dynamic, youthful appearance vital for first impressions. Click here now to revitalize your body's natural rhythms and present your best self in every meeting and adventure.
Welcome to the Tactical Traveler, the podcast where adventure meets precision and the journey is just as important as the destination. Bringing you the inside scoop on the most thrilling and efficient travel experiences. Each episode, we'll dive into the art of travel, from navigating off the beaten path destinations to mastering the art of packing like a pro. So buckle up, get your compass ready, and let's embark on a new adventure with Tactical Traveler. Here's your host, John Rankin.
Welcome to the Tactical Traveler. My name's John Rankin. Today, I have a guest coming to us all the way from Stuttgart, Germany. Bree is a former active, well, I probably shouldn't say former since she was in the Marine Corps, was active duty Marine Corps, is now a full-time reservist with the Marines, as well as an officer for them. She's a world traveler, Instagram influencer. As we were doing a pre-call, I have just had a ton of commonality in some of the things that we've done. Welcome to the show, Bree Burgett, right?
Yes, right? Good afternoon. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to join you.
Yeah. So I think, first of all, number one, thank you for your service. I served as well. And so I always want to let people know right away, kind of the sacrifice that, you know, I served before the war. So the sacrifice that your generation of soldiers and Marines have had to make. It's been a 20-year conflict. So, you know, that's been pretty significant in your sacrifice in that. Why don't you just kind of tell people what you do in the Marine Corps? Obviously, if you've got anything that's sensitive, don't feel like I need to know it. But just share with us a little bit about your story in the Marines.
Absolutely, yes. So it has been an absolute privilege to get to serve in the military. I planned on coming in and just doing a few years with the Marine Corps and ended up absolutely loving the type of people I think that are drawn to serving in the military, and especially the Marine Corps has been a really good fit, and it's a very unique breed of people, especially, I know we talked a little bit about between the Army and the Marines and the different branches of who goes different directions, but the Marine Corps ended up being a really good fit, and I have loved the different challenges they've thrown at me and the constant opportunity to do new things and go work with different people all around the world has been an amazing experience, and has definitely opened the door for some of the other things that we've talked about and the places that you get to go. And sometimes it's not the best destinations and locations that you're going to, but it's definitely been some very valuable experiences that have helped shape me, and it's been quite the ride so far.
Yeah. Now, what do you actually do in the Marine Corps? And did that switch for you when you went from active duty to full-time reserves?
So my primary MOS is combat engineer. And I'm a little biased, but I think that's one of the best things that you can do, of getting to build things and blow things up. After doing that for the first few years and getting to do time out in Okinawa with the engineer platoon and aviation company. Then I did MRFD down in Australia. And then I came back over and went to MCSIG. So it's the Security Cooperation Group. I have background with Hungarian and French. And so I thought I was going to be assigned to the Europe team, but they were lacking officers in the Africa side. So they plugged me in there. So with zero Africa experience, all of a sudden I jumped in with assisting in assessments and planning security cooperation engagements in Africa. So I learned a lot about Africa very quickly. And then over the past 5 or 6 years, I've been working both there, and then I came over here to Germany, to Stuttgart, and I've been working again in the Africa section, focusing on different regions across the continent. But that's where I got my, well, I got a secondary MOS as a Foreign Security Force Advisor. That helped in the door. And then I continued on and I completed my master's and did some focus on Africa-related subjects. And so I was able to get the experience track regional affairs officer for Sub-Saharan Africa. And so that ties in with the job that I'm currently doing. And I'm getting ready to leave here and head back for some more school in Quantico.
Nice. Now, what was your degree? I mean, I would assume the Marine Corps is the same as, you know, the rest of the military, that you had to have had a college degree to be an officer. So what was your college background?
So my undergrad degree was in political science and international relations, which is it seems like a fairly common degree for people that go into the military. But I graduated fairly young. I planned on going State Department route or something else, but I was 19 when I graduated. So I was pretty young, but the military was still willing and interested in letting me come and play with them for a little bit. And so that's also one of the reasons that I started looking that way initially right out of college, of joining the military.
Oh, okay, cool. Man, so you graduated college at 19?
Yes, yep.
Okay, so for all of our active duty and veteran friends, understand that this is two military people talking. So as smart as you are, why'd you join the Marine Corps?
Oh, you know, everyone have the different pitches and the way they try and get you to be interested in their service. And I was very interested in the Army. The Navy gave a good pitch of like, here's all the great things you'll be able to do with us. And, you know, Air Force has great quality of life. And the Marines are just big-hearted people that aren't necessarily the brightest, and they had the best hook of just like, well, if you can make it in. And I was like, oh, all right, what are the qualifications, what do I need to do? And so I did a pretty quick turn on the application, and then I actually bought a one-way plane ticket and just thought I would go to Australia before I started a real job and a career, that way I could get one last big adventure in. It was my first big solo trip. But I applied for the Marine Corps, and then like 2 days later, got on a plane and just moved to Australia. And then a few months go by and they email and they're like, hey, congratulations, you start in a couple weeks, like, come on back to the States. So yeah, quick turn on that. But it was, I'm glad I got the chance to go and take that type of a large adventure, which is difficult to do later in life, I think.
Yeah, no, for sure. And from a traveling perspective, you really couldn't have done any better than the Marines or the Navy, just simply because of the way that they run things. I have a couple of buddies in the Marines. I have a couple of buddies that are in the SEALs. And it would seem to me, from everything I've talked to you with the Army guys and then the people I know in the Air Force, that both the Navy and the Marine Corps travel far more than either the Air Force or the Army. As far as like exotic destinations, not talking about necessarily deployments, but you know, it's rare in the Army you get Okinawa. It's rare in the Army you get, you know, some of these other locations. It just doesn't seem to happen as much. So, whereas nearly everybody I've talked to in the Marine Corps has been somewhere cool over in the East. It's like, man, how do you guys do that?
It is very nice that Okinawa is such an easy place to go and be located. And so there's some people that would prefer to stay in Pendleton, stay in California, and then some that have a lot of families in the East Coast. So especially that was the first duty station that I requested, and I was very happy to be able to go to Okinawa. And then from there, when you're doing larger scale exercises and you're working with different partners, you're going to places like the Philippines and Thailand, and it is very cool. And getting the chance to go and visit those places while you're working is amazing. And then if you add a little bit of leave time on the back, stay a couple extra days and explore a little bit more of the countryside, a great opportunity to be able to see something low price for you, and it ties in with your work. So it's a little bit more convenient. You're saving all the flight time. So there's definitely a lot of really cool opportunities of the exercises and some of the different places that you can go while you're being stationed in places like Okinawa or up near Tokyo.
Yeah. Now you've been to what, 70 countries, I think you said, or 118 countries. Which one was it?
108 so far.
108.
Yeah. My tracker stopped last year with COVID. I haven't gone anywhere new for over about a year and a half now, almost. Yeah. But I was thankful I was able to do all of the countries. So I've been here in Stuttgart for a little over 3 years. And I definitely took advantage of every weekend, cheap plane tickets that you can get here, and traveled all over the place here in Europe. So it has definitely been a great time and a great place to be stationed.
Yeah. Now, you know, one of the things that I find so interesting about this, I mean, obviously when you're in Europe, visiting countries is like visiting states in the United States, because everything is so condensed. And I was actually just talking with somebody the other day, and a lot of people don't realize that Alaska covers 3/4 of the landmass of Europe. So, but to be able to get 108 countries while being, you know, full-time active duty for the last, you know, nearly 10 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's pretty extraordinary. And I hear a lot of people. And, you know, obviously the military service makes it a little bit different because we get 30 days of leave every year, unless we're deployed to a combat zone. But how have you managed to travel that much? And I really want you to kind of dig into this, because I don't think people should have an excuse. And if you can do it full time in the military, I mean, outside of Europe, because you've lived there for the last couple of years, just talk about how you've managed to do that. People don't know this, but in the military, we don't make a lot of money. So, you know, even as officers, you guys don't really make a lot of money.
Yeah. So very, I think, detailed planning has been a very key part of being able to schedule out and figure out how to do so many different places, and definitely taking full advantage of those 30 days. And that is a massive help for being able to go to so many different places. That when I was in Okinawa, I did one long trip where I just bounced in between different countries. So I think I started in Thailand, quick flight over to Cambodia. It took like a 2-hour flight for like $100, then flew from there up to China and then over to India. So I was knocking out, I wanted to do the 7 wonders of the world. So I was knocking a couple of those out. But again, just very detailed planning of like looking at, there's tons of different cheap airlines that you can do. And of course, there's the credit card hacks where you can use different credit cards. And being active duty, they have a couple of options. So like the Amex Platinum, where they waive all your fees and you get discounts, or they'll give you a certain amount of money to use for certain airlines. And so I read a ton of different things, and I've tried to capture some of that in the blog and just share some of the valuable advice for how I can do some of these things cheaper. But also being younger, and I was much more willing just to stay anywhere I could find a cheap place. And so hostels is a great way to do budget travel. And I know people that haven't done a lot of traveling, or they've gone to a few places where it may seem sketchier, or a little less inclined to go to a hostel, but there's so many great options of staying in very cheap places, and you meet people. So a lot of these trips I've done by myself. I would prefer to travel with friends, but I never hold off or postpone a trip just because I'm going to be traveling alone. And I think that's another key one of when you're planning all of these things, that just go ahead and try it. Do a solo trip at least once, see if you like it. And it's an easier way to travel because you're just focusing on one schedule and what you want to do. And it makes it easier to fill in a lot of the different activities you want to do in the different places that you're visiting. But there's definitely cheaper ways to travel. So I think figuring out how you can use those days and maximize them, especially wherever you're located in the world. So if it's Japan, if it's Germany, if it's Hawaii, wherever you're at, even in the States, that when I was in Fort Story in Virginia Beach area, I was constantly traveling from there. That's when I hit more in South America. So figuring out where those quicker flights are that you can take advantage of every 72, every 96, or the 3 and 4 day weekends. I'm always getting corrected from my Army friends for saying 72 and 96. But just taking full advantage of the days that you have off, because there are a lot of benefits with having so many of those days. And Unfortunately, I haven't gone home and visited my family much, and I know that they don't appreciate that this is how I spend all of my leave days, but it's definitely one of the ways that I've gotten to see so many of these places. And kind of how I mentioned before of going on the different exercises for work or TAD trips that you're doing in different countries and abroad, that it's easier to add on. So going to Morocco, I've done African Lion, that we have the exercise in Morocco, and I've added a couple days of leave on those trips for going a couple different years that I've gone to African Lion. So one, you know, I stayed in Morocco and I took a bus up to a different city, up to Marrakesh. From there, I went out and did this 4 day trek through the Sahara, riding camels and staying in a camp out in the middle of nowhere on the border of Algeria, which was a very cool experience. Another time I at the end of the Moroccan exercise, I jumped over to Egypt and I got to see the pyramids. And again, if it's on, you're already there for work, you're able to save yourself a lot of money. And it's just the time that you're taking in between and that shorter flight rather than going all the way around the world again. So
sure.
Definitely lack of opportunities.
Now, what was your first solo trip? I want to talk a little bit about, you know, being a female solo traveling, because Expedia Group says that the fastest growing group of travelers is young single females. So what was your first experience with that? And what, you know, what kind of things went through your mind?
So I think my first big adventure that I did was the Australia trip. So right after college, I didn't do really any planning for it. I just thought, you know, Australia is going to be a safe, easy country to go to. I'll just buy a plane ticket. And I think halfway there on the airplane ride, I realized I really had nothing set up. I didn't know where I was staying. I didn't have a job. I really had nothing planned out there. And I don't think I would do that again, but it was a great experience because it definitely put me outside my comfort zone. It's easy there because everyone speaks English, and it was super easy to find my way around and get hired. I got a job there. I worked as a waitress in a nice restaurant. And so I think just taking that first big step of like, go ahead and get outside of your comfort zone, try it. If you don't like it, it's not something I think some people would much prefer to travel with friends because you get to share experiences and everything. But I've had some phenomenal times on trips that I've done solo where I've just fallen into new groups of people that I've run into in one city and kind of tag along and join their group for ways. And I've stayed friends with a ton of different people that I've met all over the world on these different solo trips, because when you're by yourself, you're forced to kind of go and talk with whoever is there and meet different people. And it's definitely been a positive experience, I think. But for what you were saying of how there's so many, this is a fast growing group of people, absolutely true. I've seen so many more over the last 10 years of solo females just on their own in new cities. And I think they're ones that are also a lot easier to link up with when you're traveling and you're in a random city in Europe or whatever for a weekend. That I've just met lots of different women that are traveling by themselves and exploring Europe or traveling through any, name your city.
Yeah. Would you say that you've had any experiences that have made you question, and there's actually a very specific reason why I'm bringing this up, but would you say there's been any experiences you've had that's made you really question the idea of traveling solo as a female?
So I did have one in Barcelona that I landed, and I was getting ready to do this little solo road trip around the country. I was on my way actually to do the running of the bulls in Pamplona. And someone came up. So I was doing an inspection. I had rented a car and put my bags in the back seat, walking around the car to check for any scratches. And somebody came up and just took my backpack out of the back seat and started running. a lady yelled at me and told me, she was like, oh, that man took your bag. And so immediately I just chased him. I just saw red training for the PFT. I was running all the time at that time. And so I just chased him, screaming every four letter word. And I think he probably was terrified that there's some psychotic woman running after him in the parking garage. He dropped my bag and I ran up, grabbed it, went back to the car. And a couple of minutes later, it finally like caught up with like, oh, that could have gone way worse. But I think, again, being in the military, you just kind of quickly react to things. If that had happened when I was fresh out of college, it would have been a completely different experience because my passports were in that bag, my wallet was in that bag. That would have been an extremely rough start to a trip. And so even, but that happened after years of and being a very experienced traveler, that it's still, those things can still happen. So I think
yeah,
prepared is one thing, and but you never know exactly how you're going to react in that situation. So there's definitely pros, I think, to going with groups because it gives that element of safety, but there's still going to be the unexpected.
Yeah, but to be honest, that situation in Barcelona could have happened to you in New York City.
Right, absolutely.
You know, and like I said, I had an actual agenda in asking this because, you know, you have to have wisdom to know where is safe to go, whether you're a male or a female. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it doesn't really matter, you know, by and large, whether or not you're a male or a female. Now, I'm a bigger guy, you know, chances are that unless it's a group of people, I'm going to be safe no matter where I go. But I still have to, you know, be smart about where I'm choosing to go. You're not going to find me, you know, out at 3 o'clock in the morning in the, you know, a slummier part of a city, right? You know, I'm going to exercise some wisdom there. But the idea, and I hear this so much being in the travel industry and having big travel groups where women are far more afraid to travel solo. And I keep trying to tell them there's no difference from traveling to Europe or, you know, some of these other countries than there is if you're traveling to New York City or you're traveling to Chicago. Truthfully, the international incidence where somebody is actually in trouble is very, very, very low. And I've only heard about a couple of them. Now, I'm also the guy who's telling ladies, hey, you know, now this has been a while, it was before COVID, but I was like, I was in one group and they were talking about heading to a very southern remote part of Egypt. I was like, yeah, I'm not really sure that that's a good idea as a solo female. I mean, you're bordering Sudan. So like, we have to be smart about where we go. But as a big American white male, I wouldn't probably go to the southern border of Egypt. Like, she's not going to be on the top of my list because I know what happens just a little bit further south, you know? Mm-hmm. So just, you know, for the ladies that are listening to hear you've done 108 countries, you go solo often. And the worst thing that's happened to you is a purse jacker.
Yeah, definitely. And I think one of the things, so of what you were saying of where you can go, there's definitely cities in the state. So I was going on one trip from here where I flew to Detroit to do some training. I was teaching a course. And then I went from Detroit back into Senegal. And I was going through all my safety briefs and everything, getting ready to leave for the trip. And I was like, honestly, I think that Detroit is probably a more dangerous portion of this trip than it is going to be going into Dakar. Like, Dakar is a very safe city. I know the areas, I know the restaurant, like I know, I'm much more familiar with Senegal. And so there's definitely places in the States, but I think you're also more likely to let your guard down there. And when you're abroad, I think that's one of the benefits. And when you're traveling solo is that you take a little bit more responsibility. I know I do that. I watch more carefully what I'm drinking, how late I'm staying, the neighborhoods I'm going. Whereas if you're with a group, it's easy, I think, just to kind of go with the flow and go different places. But when you're traveling alone, you are a little bit more aware. And that's definitely helpful to keep you safe on those solo trips.
Yeah. And, you know, being that you're military, you know, a lot of people don't really think about it this way, but you can tell in the things you're saying, I wrote a PDF for solo women travelers. And, you know, the number one thing is just do a little bit of research about the country you're going to, right? Learn a couple of their key phrases. If you happen to know people, connect with them right off the bat. Whereas us as military, we kind of think about that and we go, oh, that's so common sense, but I don't know how really common sense it is. And, you know, it's really good for people to understand that, well, number one, if you've ever been to New York City, you probably shouldn't let your guard down. And if you haven't been, then take this conversation as a reason why you should. I think New York's been one of the most dangerous places I've been outside of Afghanistan.
Definitely one of the most dangerous ones to drive in. I'm always nervous driving through New York. I'll drive pretty much anywhere, but you got to be careful there.
Right.
Root Brands Wellness's Zero In offers a competitive edge over other nootropics like Joe Rogan's Alpha Brain by focusing on natural gut health axis optimization, providing clearer cognitive function and sustained attention without artificial stimulants. Travelers will benefit from enhanced mental clarity during long journeys, while entrepreneurs and business owners can leverage improved focus for strategic planning and execution. Elevate your mental game beyond conventional limits and outperform your competition with Zero In today.
So now I want to transition a little bit because you do the same type of traveling that I do, which is very adventure or event experience based. And we actually both climbed Mount Kilimanjaro. So tell me how that kind of happened for you, when you went, why you went. I mean, you don't hear about that very often. There's not a ton of people who have done Mount Kilimanjaro.
Yeah, so I started doing more mountain climbing. I think the first kind of smaller mountain I did was Mount Fuji in Tokyo. Loved the experience, thought it was super easy. So I was like, well, let's just keep trying. So I went to Patagonia and hiked the five or the W down there for like 5 days, and then continued on just finding smaller mountains, but hadn't really done any of the seven summits or any of the larger mountains. And so I was going fairly frequently again to Africa for work. And so one of the trips I did research, figured out when was a good time of year to go to avoid the rainy season, tried to do a little bit of prep, but it's difficult when you're busy with work all the time. So I picked the time frame to go in December. And so it was 2.5 years ago, I think, is when I did Kilimanjaro. Added it onto a trip. I had signed up, so I did it with a tour guide company. But then everyone else that was supposed to be going on the group fell off. And so it was just me and my guide that we hiked up the mountain together. And it was, again, the first time I have done one of the larger mountains. And so I was a little bit concerned about, you know, how steep is it going to be? How is the altitude going to affect me? And I was super surprised of it's not an incredibly difficult climb. It's just you keep walking. And I think, again, for people who are in the military, you're like, oh, that's not bad. You know, you just put your head down, you just keep walking. And the guide was constantly telling me, oh, pulley pulley, which is Swahili. Pulley, pulley. I know you would recognize that term. slowly. That's how we climb the mountain. And it was a very nice, relaxed pace. It poured rain for the first, I think, day and maybe day and a half. And then it cleared up and we had beautiful weather on the trail. There weren't too many people because it was closer to the off season. And it was a great experience. So getting up to the top, we did it in a little bit quicker time because he let me just keep going. And it was very fun. Pick up some Swahili phrases. Everyone's singing and dancing around the little camps at night, and you look up and it's just all stars in the sky, and you can see the silhouette of the mountain peak that you're climbing towards, and just a very cool experience.
It was one of my highlights for sure.
It's such a beautiful place. So then we hike up and we camp out, get up around midnight the morning, summit morning, the wind is just absolutely howling. Snow is blowing everywhere. You wake up and you see this whole little string of glowing lights up the mountain and realize that's all the people who've just been hiking the entire night. We put on our packs and just start going, and it was back and forth of like, take the little gator off my face so I could breathe in, put it back on because it was so cold outside. But continued, climbed up the mountain. We did it in a couple hours. So we ended up being the first ones that got up to the very summit. Or I think one person was in front of us, but we had the whole top to ourselves. And we got there just before the sun rose. And it was absolutely incredible. So when I climbed Mount Fuji before, tried to climb for sunrise, and it was a big storm rolled in. So we made it to the top, but didn't see anything. So this was the opposite experience, and it was absolutely worth it to see, you know, everything lining up in the vast plains that are stretching out below you, and just all of the gorgeous sunrise colors coming up. Still very, very cold. So we briefly enjoyed the moment at the top and then hustle back down the mountain, but
right. Yeah. the wind was pretty significant when I went. I actually got AMS my first time. I got sick at 17.5 and then decided that I just couldn't accept that and went back a second time. My second trip was actually more frustrating in one way only than my first trip, which is I was in pretty good shape for my second go around. Was making really good time, and I just hear this noise off to my right, and here comes this little itty bitty 70-year-old Japanese lady screaming up the mountain. That lady went so fast, like my ego was bruised. I was like, no, like I can't handle that. My guy was like, bully, don't worry. Don't worry. And I'm like, yeah, but like that chick just like screamed up the mountain. Bully, don't worry. You know, but it was just so crazy to see, you know. And then we had one guy who literally was there on a medical missions trip. He was a doctor, had no boots, had nothing, and wore tennis shoes and climbed. You know, like no preparation at all. He's like, yeah, I just decided to do that. We're sitting there eating our rice at about 16. It was before, you know, before we made Summit Push. So, you know, the stories that you hear and the things that you see on that mountain, I'll never forget. As a matter of fact, I'm going back next year. Granted, everything with COVID chills out with my 15-year-old son. He'll be 16 and he wants to go climb. So
that's going to be such a good experience to do with him. That'll be so cool for him.
Yeah. It'll be amazing. Now, you're not stopping with Kilimanjaro, though. You want to do the other ones as well.
Yeah, so after doing Kilimanjaro, and like you said, you talk to so many interesting people in the mountain, and so many of them are legitimate climbers, that a handful of people were talking about which of the other seven that they had done. And Mount Elbrus was one that a lot of people continued to recommend. You should go and do that one next. And I figured since I'm here in Europe, that's an easier one to go do. So it's in Russia, which is, of course, challenging to get to as an American citizen. But you jump through all the hoops. And I went there in 2019. So a couple months after I'd done Kilimanjaro, I just immediately turned around and went and did Mount Elbrus in Russia. So I did a little bit of ice training for that one because you have to use the crampons, and I thought we would have to use some ice picks on the way up. So I learned how to do that in preparation for it. And then you wear crampons when you climb it, but it was not
right.
Same thing. It's just, you know, sticking with it, keeping good slow pace, get up in the middle of the night and you make the push. But it was.
Yeah, and that one's a little bit different because you start the climb at what, 12,000, right?
I think something like that. Yeah, it was a little bit higher than Kilimanjaro. No, is it?
So the starting point is higher, but it's 2,000 feet lower. But you have to actually trudge through the snow. That was the big thing about Elbrus. Like you have to actually be in really good shape to do Elbrus. You're not doing as much elevation, but you're like plowing through snow. So you have to be. Your legs have to be in really good shape for that one.
Yeah. And I had a couple weeks before that, I had been surfing and I had sea urchins. So the water, it wasn't quite deep enough, and I came off and I got sea urchins that got on my feet. So I had like 60 little spines that broke off, and I had to go to the doctor and they tried to cut out most of them, but I still had some infected sea urchin spines left in my feet. There were about 5 of them. The doctors were like, do not go and climb this mountain. Like, it's a really bad idea. You might be able to do it, but it's not going to be good. It's going to be super unpleasant. And of what you're saying, where you're trudging through the snow. And I was like, well, I already paid. I already got everything approved. I really don't want to back out. So I just went and did it. Had like lidocaine patches, made it up to the top, definitely hobbled back down it. That'll make it easier for the next climb, I think, just remembering, you know, I did this in Russia with infected feet. I'm going to be fine on the next mountain.
Right. That's so crazy. That's, dude, that's something tough. Now, prior to COVID, I think you were telling me that you were going to go do Vincent Massive, right?
Yeah, so that was my plan, is for the end of 2020. So I had, you know, I did the 7 wonders of the world before I turned 25, and I really wanted to hit the 7 continents before I turned 30. So I had planned on going last December and doing my last continent and going and seeing and hiking Vincent Massive. Unfortunately, obviously, COVID canceled all of the hikes and trips that were planned for last year. So this one, I'm not sure if I, hopefully I'll be able to make it there this December, but time-wise with the school that I'm going to, I don't know if I'll be able to, but that is definitely the next big bucket list adventure item I want to do.
Yeah, now that mountain is in Antarctica, for those of you who don't know, and most people save that for second to last because of the cost of airfare. So how did you manage that?
So I had been, I saved up and I put the money down that I had just saved for a year and some change from coming off the last mountain. I don't know how. I think I'm just going to continue saving and putting it aside. I might try and, you know, work with a few outdoor companies, and I do some sponsored things on my social media account. So hopefully I'll be able to pair up with a really good company and work with them on doing this exploration down there, take some cool videos and make it some kind of story that other people can engage with on there. But I don't know exactly yet.
Okay. Yeah, because when I've talked to most of the climbers, that one tends to be, you know, second or third to last. Mm-hmm. You know, Everest is your last one. And then just depending on the skill level of the climber, tends to be Vincent Massive or Aconcagua, you know, just kind of depending. Because Aconcagua, you've got to do a lot of vertical ascents and ice picks and being tied in. And, you know, so it has a little bit more technical climbing. Whereas the first four, Elbrus, Kilimanjaro, the one in Australia, which I forget the name of it right now, and Denali, it is really just like being in the military. It's just one foot in front of the other. Whereas the last three tend to be a little bit more technical. So that's so cool. And then, you know, Morocco, and you've just done some, when are you going to go swim with the great whites?
Oh, that's another one that I have wanted to do. So I've done some diving with sharks in different places. I think Australia, when I was living there, was the first time that I had seen sharks in the water in Ishigaki. It's a little island off of Japan. I went there when they had the hammerheads coming through. I haven't made it to the Great Whites yet, though. That's one of my big diving goals, is to go down to South Africa and do that. And also just, I think it would be cool to travel more of the coastline there and hopefully do like a road trip or something down through South Africa. I was hoping to do that before I left here. Doesn't look like with COVID it's going to be a possibility just yet, but hopefully soon.
So what is it that drives you to be this type of adventure? Like, where does this come from? Like, is this, you know, hereditary? Was your dad or your mom like this? Like, you know, when I talk to people, I find it rare amongst men and extremely rare amongst women. So it's just amazing to me that you do all this stuff. Where'd you get it from?
I don't know. Probably a few screws loose, as my parents would say. They're definitely not wired the same way. Usually if I go, so I did bungee jumping a handful of times. I did it like at the world's first bungee jump place in New Zealand, and then the world's highest one in Macau. I've done a bunch of skydiving, especially this last year, and they never want to know what I'm doing until after I've already finished it, because they want to know that I'm safe on the back end. They're fine when I'm safe and I'm on the ground walking and I've survived it, but they would rather not know anything leading up to it. And especially some of the places I go to, they're like, we just want to know when you're safe on the end. I know, I always loved Indiana Jones and Lara Croft and the big adventures, and was like, someday I'm going to go and see all of these places. Just made my whole bucket list. I think sitting on the side of a pool in Ohio when I was lifeguarding, of like, here's all of the dream places I'm going to do when I'm out of here. And I've slowly just, and again, I think the more that you go, the more confidence that you build, and sure, the more you realize how feasible things are. Because when you're in a small town in the middle of the Midwest, it seems forever away and it seems impossible to get to. But after you've done one trip, then you realize, it wasn't actually that impossible. Like, I was able to do all of these crazy things. And then you start looking, and you also meet people along the way, and you talk to them, and they say some of these other new ideas of things that you had never even thought of doing before. Like for me, doing Kilimanjaro, I'd never thought of doing the other mountains until I started and did that first hike. And then you meet other people and you start seeing, you know, these are actually, it's feasible to go and do these things and to try them. And that's one of the things I love about the traveler community, is that you just get inspired and you find these crazy destinations or festivals or cool things that you can do in countries all over the world.
Yeah, that's really amazing. And it's an addiction that feeds itself, right?
So
you get to the top of Kilimanjaro and you're like, when's the next one? You know? Yeah. Or, you know, and I think for a lot of people like us, over the last year has been a special form of torture. This is the longest I've ever gone without an international trip. And it's been just absolutely brutal. And you sit there and you think about getting on the plane, going to a new place, trying new foods, meeting new people, seeing new cultures. Mm-hmm. And I think it just gets really woven into our DNA, right? And even my kids now are like, hey, when's the next trip? Where are we going? What are we doing? And so my kids have been fortunate to have that sewn into them from an early age. It's just so interesting talking to people. And, you know, like I said, I find it to be rare when I meet guys who are as crazy as I am and want to do these things. It's even crazier when I meet a woman who does, you know, like, you know, so hopefully for everybody that's listening today, you know, your story will inspire them to do more than they ever thought they could. And that's one of the great things about being in the military, is you really learn how capable you and your body are of accomplishing things you never thought you could.
And so, I think there's so many new opportunities, especially things are becoming more connected, and you can see new places and places that people are going and see the steps of how they made that happen. It's an amazing time to be able to travel and to go and do these things. And hopefully, again, soon we'll be able to, that it'll start reopening safely, but quickly.
Yeah, right. So now, you know, here you are. You were a full-time active duty Marine. You transitioned to full-time reserves with the Marines. And then you make I don't know if you would really even call it making a pivot, but you begin to do, you know, online social media advertising and cooperative agreements. How did that all come about? I mean, what started that?
So I'm actually usually very slow to join any new social media platforms or any new apps, because I just don't want to put the time into doing any of those things. I'd rather go out and do all the experiences myself. But I eventually got on Instagram, I think back in when I was living in Japan, just to have some photos and be able to share them with friends and family. And then when I was there is when I really started doing a lot more travel all around the Pacific and, you know, going and playing with little baby tigers in Thailand and going to the Taj Mahal and going to Burma. Burma was one of the coolest places I think I've been, taking a bicycle ride through old Baygon and the old temples there. And I started posting a few of these pictures and they were getting more and more people. And as you just meet other people on the platform that are interested in the same thing, and then some of the photos would get shared. And then I started getting more and more messages of like, oh, how did you get to, you know, Burma, I think is a great example. Like, how did you get to Burma? How did you go to Cambodia? What were your tips? How did you do this solo? And I started getting a lot of the same questions. And I was like, well, maybe eventually I'll start a travel blog. And so after a few years, I think it got to like 10 or 20,000 people that were following me on Instagram. And I finally went ahead and just like put it together, like, let's pull the trigger. Let's do the travel blog thing. And so I use that as just ways to hopefully give people some useful and practical advice for how to plan trips. In the beginning, I was doing a lot more of like, here's places you can stay that are very cheap. Here's what you need to know about currency, some practical information. And then I've spread that more to my interest of what we've been talking about, like adventure travel, of here's some of the coolest places and most unique experiences that I've had in different locations. And that's what I try to put on there to even... for if you can't travel at the moment, then hopefully it's some good ideas and it will generate places and trips and things that you would like to do as the someday trip and putting it together in planning things out. Because again, that's how I've made it happen so far, is to do all of these things has been doing the detailed planning, taking advantage of the few days off, and pretty much taking advantage of wherever you're located. Because I think there's so many, it's easy to think, oh, it'd be far easier to do this, you know, if I were living in pick your country, but there's always opportunities wherever you're located to find off the beaten path things and explore more areas locally. But that was definitely how I got started with the travel blog. And I think they've just kind of fed back and forth between, and I enjoy them now, both of the platforms, because I think it helps connect with a lot of other like-minded people. And again, it helps feed the cycle of you get inspired and hopefully you pass along some good information that helps encourage other people to go on a trip that they hadn't thought of before.
Right. Yeah. And you know, when we talk about that, just so that people, because the assumption is that everybody who travels like you and I do is extraordinarily wealthy. So when you're taking a trip, talk about your budgeting real quick. I'm sure now that you've diversified with being an influencer and having a blog and you've monetized those things, I'm sure that helps. But I really want people to understand that they can travel like you're traveling without really breaking the bank, without going bankrupt to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most of my trips are just ones that I pay for everything. And so it is, again, of just... close planning for looking for the deals. And I typically use Google Flights, but I mean, there's lots of different platforms for finding cheap flights and comparing, you know, a couple weeks difference of figuring when you can take that extra couple days or when you can take those cheaper flights, or if you can fly it into a different location and, you know, take a ferry out to the place. That usually that's the most expensive part of it. But then there's so many different options nowadays for how you can stay cheaply. Of Airbnbs are a great option. Again, sometimes I'll still stay in a hostel. You can stay in a single room in one of those, and it's a great way to meet people when you're traveling. Eating and drinking, I think you can do that pretty cheap. I'm always happy to try street foods in different places. I think you get to eat your way through the city and you get a more authentic experience when you're willing to try a little bit more of the local stuff. And there's just so many different countries. So I think also when you're in the United States, it's extremely expensive to travel. And I'm even hesitant to fly, like when I'm stationed, like when I was in Fort Story and now going back, the flights in the US are so much more expensive than when you're over in different countries.
For real.
So in Japan, I would catch flights for $100 or $200. And that's you know, you're going to a new country, you're going to Hong Kong for a long weekend, and you're getting to take a ferry out to Macau for $20 or something like that. And you're spending not that much money for going on these really cool and unique trips. But again, I think the flights here in Germany, we get to go to like Mallorca for 20 euro. It's insane sometimes how the flights, but and then checking other platforms of taking trains or whatever is reliable transportation in those is a great way to save. And there's definitely cheap options if you're willing to take some time and look for it. And then before I did couch surfing, I think that's kind of gone away, which is probably better. It seemed a little of an odd thing. I tried it a couple of times, met some nice people, but I wouldn't necessarily still do that now, because I think there's so many good options that you can get for really good prices. And then with experiences like just going renting a bicycle for an afternoon, you can see so much of the entire city, you get some exercise, you get the lay of the land, and there's just lots of good ways to explore without taking expensive tours, doing like the free walking tours. I love doing that.
That's in New right. City.
They point out some great local places you can go, and you know, you give them a small tip at the end, and it's a win-win both directions. And you typically meet people, especially when solo travel, it's a great way to meet other people who are coming through the city and just passing by for a couple of days.
Yeah, so when I went to Iceland, that was one of the things I noticed right off the bat. I scored an incredible plane ticket for, I think it was like $280 or $330, very low to get to Iceland. And then when I got there and started looking at the things that I wanted to do, because I did it, like I bought the ticket, but left like 30 days later. I just saw the deal and I was like, okay, I'm going. But what I noticed was all the tours were $150-$200. Mm-hmm. And then when I started looking into it, I could drive to all those places for free. So I ended up just renting a car, which in the front side was a little bit, you know, pricey, because Iceland charged me like a $600 deposit that I wasn't really planning on, you know, but I got it back as soon as I was done. But I did so many things in 5 days or 6 days, whatever it was I was there for, that it totally made up for that $600, because I wouldn't have gotten to do that many things. I mean, I went and saw Vik, I went and did the Golden Circle, I went and did driving the countryside, I went and did some glacier climbing. I just did all these random things that costed me next to nothing because I rented my own vehicle. And then I stayed at some apartment, Airbnb, which cost me $300 for the week or $400. I mean, so all in, by the time the trip was said and done, I spent $1,300.
Yeah. And they have the cheap flights because WOW is going from the States and they're trying to make that one of like a layover destination. So I think I went from DC to Iceland for New Year's Eve and it costs like $300 or something. So similar thing, that it's just, there are good options if you just take the time and you look and you plan a little ahead, that there's different pop-up last minute cheap deals that come up that you can definitely take advantage. And I did the same when you're describing it. I was laughing because I did the same itinerary going there and driving around. And then I think also you see, especially one downside with social media is that you'll see like the Blue Lagoon, which is a gorgeous place. It's this really nice bath that you can go to. But if you go inland, 15, 20 minutes, there was another hot spring that was, I think, a quarter of the price for an entire afternoon. No crowds. There was probably three or four people there for the entire day. And it was such a better experience. And I was like, I could have just skipped the Blue Lagoon completely of all of the crowds, like having to get the ticket. And it was just so expensive that there's so many different options. And I think if you take some time, and that one was one looking back, I was like, I really didn't need to do the Blue Lagoon because there was the better options, that is a more authentic, again, experience if you're just willing to go a little off the beaten path, and you can do such cool things.
Yeah, and I've totally found that going off the beaten path has always been better than doing the tourist attractions. Mm-hmm. I've just had a lot more fun. And I do the majority of my stuff is solo, you know, with four kids, it can be kind of expensive. I take them as much as I can. However, unfortunately, I can't get them passports. So the ability to not be into what are the tourist attractions. So I always ask when I have people from other countries, what's the best thing you would want to go see in your country that tourists don't know about? And I ask that every time I travel. Where do you think I should go?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there are
options for, again, like off the beaten path of, there's the trail, the volcano trail through Iceland, that it's like, you could go there and you can spend a handful of days crossing and seeing some of the most beautiful landscapes that they have there, and you're spending next to nothing because you're staying in the mountain huts for a couple of dollars and you pack your own food. So there's definitely ways to get completely unique experiences in these places that doesn't have to be the cookie cutter version that everyone else goes and sees the same waterfalls, which they're beautiful, but you can definitely have a completely different experience for a fraction of the cost going to a lot of places.
Yeah. And I mean, you could do that in every country, you know, regardless of your experience. And like you said, literally once you've done it a couple of times, after that, you stop really worrying about it. And I've even had some really crazy scenarios overseas where the guide company didn't show up to pick me up. So not speaking any of the native language and nobody spoke English, I had to figure out how to get 6 hours east on my own. And that was my very, very, very first international trip ever in the middle of a civil war. So,
But then after that, you're like, I can certainly get anywhere.
I can get anywhere. It's like, and hopefully, you know, the people listening never have an experience like that, even though I loved it. Probably would not encourage most people to travel again, So now this was, before we had the internet. So in my defense, I didn't really know they were still in the middle of their civil war. So what was the best way for somebody to get in touch with you or to follow your blog? Where can they contact you at and find you at?
So I have the blog and the Instagram title under the same name. So it's The Bree Adventure, which is fitting with all of the adventure travel all over the place. But I'm on, both of those and share lots of all of my travel experiences.
Great. Well, listen, Bree, thank you so much for your time and for your service. It's just been an awesome conversation with you. I've thoroughly enjoyed it and hope to see you around soon.
Thank you so much for having me on. This has been a lot of fun. It's definitely giving me the itch to go back out and do more of these things. I can't wait for it.
Right. Great. All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye.
Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review to keep the adventure going. Stay tuned for our next episode where we'll continue to explore the world tactically. Until then, keep your itineraries tight and your travel spirits adventurous. Safe travels, and see you next time on Tactical Traveler.